From downtown, this is Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam, and you're listening to Nintendo Main Podcast. Boom shakalaka!
This week on Nintendo Main, the Wii U and the 3DS die this week, so get on there and play some Mario Maker, dammit. Oh, and also, I finally got around to side order.
I'm less than a wisp away from beating Ori.
Much suspense. Welcome to Nintendo Main Podcast, episode 416, your place to hear Nintendo fans mourn the upcoming death of the Wii U and the 3DS online. And we are your hosts. I'm Trey, Wii U Never Dies, Johnson.
I'm John, next week for real knitter.
I like how I kept saying that the Wii U's dying and then I said it wasn't. It's very confusing, this episode. It's going back and forth all over the place. You've probably already thrown your headphones like that meme.
But we're in denial.
Yeah. But yes, we are back again. Jeremy is not here, but he did send me a text to read on the show.
Let's hear it.
He said, "Tell the audience I said, sup, I'm about to bathe in Goron Springs in Colorado." So there you go. So they're in Colorado right now.
Well, let's do the Goron dance for him right now.
I probably have it somewhere on my iTunes, but I can't seem to open my iTunes right now. So we've had kind of a disaster of trying to get things started today, but we're finally here. We're finally up and running, like my Wii U behind
just
me.
Just know right that we did this all for you, this the struggle to get this Zoom working properly during peak hours using the free version of Zoom.
Yeah,
it was something, but it was worth it.
When you have a weekly podcast where different people do different things, when one person drops out, you notice the differences, you know, like whenever John's not here to do the outlines are always terrible, and when Jeremy's not here to do the video, it's always a nightmare because, you know, of the Zoom shit or whatever. And if you hear, if you hear that hum in the background, that's my Wii U, which is actually running right now. Speaking of, I guess we can kind of cut into it, as we normally do, talk about games that we got and games that we've been playing. I played the Wii U last night for the first time in a long time. Because now is the time. Now is the time to play your Wii U. If you want to play Wii U online, you got to do it now.
You're like letting your Wii U go to the park one last time before it closes forever. You're just giving it one last little sweet taste of the life it once knew. And it will never know again.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of sad. Well, because I was like, I was playing the Wii U first. You know, obviously, I booted up Splatoon 1, where it all started. You know, let's go back to the very beginning of Splatoon. It's amazing, like, how popular Splatoon is that you kind of forget that was a Wii U original. You know, that started on the system that no one bought, you know, but now it's pretty popular. But yeah, it's cool to go back to Splatoon 1. It looks, I know the Octolings are a little bit taller, but it still controls the same. It's a little weird because the jump button's in a different place. Like, the jump button's X instead of B. So if you play a lot of Splatoon 2 and 3, it takes some getting used to. But there's some things that I really miss in 1 that never made it to 2 because you don't have two screens. Like, number 1, you get to play little, like, 8-bit mini games on the controller pad while you're waiting to, like, for the match to start, which is awesome.
That's cool.
I guess in 3 you can, like, there's that room where you can run around and you can shoot the paint and jump through the paint and all that. That's like a lot more advanced, but in the original 1 there were these little games that you could play. There's like a racing game. There's like a volleyball type game where you like spike this thing at these other Octolings or whatever. But they're these little 8-bit games that you play on the pad while you're waiting, and it's kind of cool, you know. And there's like a rhythm game too. There's like 5 or 6 different ones, and you can just switch through them really quickly.
So come next week, you can play those little mini games forever as you wait for an online session that's not coming.
Yeah, I wonder what's gonna I'm like, are those mini games just gonna disappear because they were kind of there to give you something to do, like, while you're waiting? Like, will they just not be able to be played since you can't play online? Yeah, that's it. But weirdly enough, like, I had no, I mean, I think everybody probably feels the way I am, the way I do here. Like, I had no problem finding people to play on Splatoon 1. I played, like, I even played, like, the pro stuff, you know, that you get graded on or whatever. I forget exactly what it's called. And I played the regular matches, and it was just, like, I just got on really quickly. There's a ton of people still playing it, so.
I wonder if that's the norm, though, or if there's just a surge of people, you know, rallying around the game in its last moments.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, yeah, either... I'm sure there's going to be those purists, you know, like the Smash Brothers Melee purists or whatever, that are like, Splatoon 1 is the best one out of all of them, you know, and that was the only one. 2 and 3 are garbage or whatever. But, it does have its, you know, there's perks that I forget, like, aside from the mini games you can play, there's the map that's on your screen at all times. That's always, the Wii U was always, you know, the 2-screen, you can always have that map on the bottom. But for Splatoon, you can see, like, all of your players and where they're at, and you can see, like, whether they got killed or not or whatever, and all you have to do to jump from one to another is you just tap them on the menu, and then you'll automatically warp to where they're at, which I think in 2 and 3 you, like, press a direction on the control pad or something to warp where they're at, like something like that. But it was just much easier in the original one, and playing it was the big thing, and I turned on the motion control and all that, which I never really used in Splatoon 1, but now I do in 3, because, I don't know, I guess everybody said you had to, so I had to learn how to do it. But, I tried to do it with Splatoon 1, and I did okay. You know, I got some, I was looking at, I'm a level 17, and level 20 is the cap for the regular matches in Splatoon 1. So I was like, oh, I could try to get to 20, and then I'm halfway through 17, and I see it, like, go up just tiny, tiny bits every time, and I'm like, there's no way. I don't have enough time to get to 20 before they turn it off, because it's gonna get turned off on Monday, the 8th, and I don't know if they're gonna drop it at midnight, or if it's gonna be later, or like whatever.
They're gonna do it the exact moment that the solar eclipse happens. They're just timing it perfectly. It's going up a huge bang.
Yeah, I was gonna try it. Well, I'm planning on streaming some stuff this weekend. I want to, you know, I was going to throw up a bunch of messages on Twitter or Blue Sky or whatever else. And anybody who's hearing it here, if you have Mario Maker 1, send me your codes. I want to play your levels. If anybody who's listening to this made a level for Mario Maker 1. Because I went and I played Jeremy's level. I went and played the famous Pink Yoshi and the Clown Wizards for maybe the last time. Well, I mean, I could, like, go to Jeremy's house and play it, like, on his Wii U or whatever, but... Oh yeah, I guess you could download it also. I didn't think about that, but yeah, this will be the last time that you can just play your friend's Mario Maker level and all that stuff. So
my hope is that for Mario Maker content and for any such content that goes offline forever, is that they don't just hit a big delete button; that they save it, archive it somehow, some way, for some kind of potential use in the future. I think it'd just be wasteful to just delete everything. Just do us a favor and save it. And then perhaps maybe in Mario Maker 3, surprise, all your Mario Maker 1 levels are ready to go. Like, that would be a beautiful thing. What a great thing to do for your fans. Yep. Don't delete all this stuff that people made.
Yeah. With the death of the Wii U and the 3DS internet, you know, it's like, it makes me wonder if are they preparing for something now? Like, you know, it's, everybody's like, oh, we're going to have an April Direct. Everybody thinks there'll be an April Direct. Will we get one now that they're just, like, shutting the door on Wii U and 3DS? Will there be one that's like, hey, here's Metroid Prime Federation Force coming to Switch?
More likely is, like, they're going to take all those resources and upgrade them and use them for Switch 2 and get ready for that to happen.
Yeah, get us some good online already.
Yep.
I mean, well, if, you know, coming from a person who plays AEW Fight Forever, which probably has the worst online of any game that I've ever played, the Nintendo Online works pretty well compared to that. You know, like, if you play AEW for a while, and when you get disconnected multiple times, go and play like Mario Kart, and it'll be like, oh, this is so smooth, or Splatoon, or fucking Smash Brothers, or whatever, and it works so much better. But yeah, so I did that. I played Mario Maker. I did, like, the 100 Mario Challenge or whatever, where it sends you, like, where it basically sends you the random levels and all that. And I had to connect. It was the first time I had ever connected the Wii U to this internet, to the internet at this location, since we just moved last year. So that was interesting. But it seems to work better. Like, I had the hardest time connecting to the internet at the other place and we have a different service now, a different company. And now I'd actually connected easily for the 3DS and the Wii U. So I got both of them online last night, and it was mostly, you know, Splatoon 1, because I had been, like I said, which I'll get into later, I'd been playing Splatoon 3, and I was like, oh, let's play Splatoon 1, because we only have so many days left. And you have Splatoon 1, John. You should jump on there at least, like, once before Monday comes. Do it today, tomorrow, before it's gone forever. Yeah. You should at least, like, see what it feels like. Splatoon 1 was a good
game. I'd have to hook my Wii U back up. I had to disconnect all my stuff when I got my floors replaced. So it'll take a little bit of effort.
No, it's not. It's not hooked up.
Well, all my systems aren't hooked up right now.
Yeah, it depends on
the Switch.
I mean, I was gonna say it. You know, it's just one. You just got to plug it into the wall and put a USB and put a HDMI plug in there, and that's ready to go. I guess in the Wii U, it's more complicated because you got to charge your controller and all that. You know, because that's probably dead. But if you had any of the Pro controllers, those things keep charges for like years. The Wii U ones do. They would go for like 20 hours before they ran out of juice. They're pretty awesome.
That's what I've heard.
But that's probably because they didn't have motion control in them, or Rumble, I don't think. So that was.
It surprised me to hear you say that you didn't use motion control for Splatoon when you're such you're so adamant about using motion controls in any third person shooters.
Well, yeah. The thing about the Splatoon one is I like it. I obviously like it for everything where you can use it just to kind of finesse it. But the way Splatoon works is you have to, that's all you can use it for. So if you have the motion turned on, you can't aim up and down with the analog stick. You have to do it with motion only.
Gotcha.
That was the big thing that was kind of annoying. So I found like it was more precise to use the stick. And it is still kind of annoying, you know, because you have to like sit in a certain way, because you know that if you're going to move, it moves so much more than other ones would, where you can use the stick and the motion control. Like, I prefer that, where you can just kind of like finesse it a little bit if you need to. But it's fine. I mean, it works better in the long run once you figure out how to do it, because you can aim a lot quicker and all that stuff. And you know. But yeah, anyway, it was fun to play it, because I don't think I ever played it with full motion control on the Wii U, but now I did. So I did that. I did like the pro stuff. I played like, what was it, Splat Zones? Or I think it was just Splat Zones. That was all that was on there. Oh yeah, and since I hadn't played Splatoon in a long time, I had to wait through like 15 minutes of announcements from the Squid Sisters or whatever. And I'm surprised they didn't say anything about like everything ending. There was nothing about that. Like, yeah, I was waiting for them to say some sort of funny little thing that's like, oh yeah, and on Monday we're all dying. Nice playing with you. I mean, I know, like, their characters have, like, you know, you see them in Splatoon 3 and 2, you know, they've carried on. Even with Side Order, you can make your, you know, you can make your world look like original Splatoon 1 and all that. You know, if you miss the Inkopolis and all that.
If they had programmed in some big world-ending event to go out on, you know, like a Fortnite might do these days, that seems to me like the type of game that would have been great for a big send off in game.
They should have done they should have brought the Splatfest back to Splatoon 1 is what they should have done. You know, cuz they do all the Splatfest for Splatoon 3, do like one Splatfest finale over the weekend and have it be like Splatoon 1 versus 2 versus 3 or something like that, and have everybody team up for the different games and then, you know, do that. It'd be cool if you could actually, I mean, this would probably be beyond Nintendo's capabilities, but if you could actually do it where if you're for Splatoon 1, you have to play Splatoon 1. And if you're for Splatoon 2, you have to play it on Splatoon 2. And if you're for 3, you have to play it on 3. And it could have all three of them
unite connected all the
through the internet. But that seems something that Nintendo would not do. But that would be really cool. That would be the ultimate showdown. And, you know, whoever loses. And if for some reason Splatoon 1 wins, they gets to stay on for another month or something like that. You know, I know they would never do that, but it would be funny if they did. But they could at least like throw one last Splatfest in there just to, so you could see the Inkopolis going crazy. And it could be like Splatoon 1, 2, and 3, but just like put it on Splatoon 1 or something like that, so the people that are still playing it can play it. But I'm definitely going to stream it Sunday night for sure. And I'm going to do one of those, like, you know, let's play it till it dies sort of thing. And see how long we can go. I mean, I'm not, you know, if it gets to like 3 a.m. or whatever, I'm probably going to stop. But I thought I'd just do like somewhat of a marathon thing and just, you know, especially with Splatoon, like see how much I can play it until they kick me off. So
Sounds fun.
So that'll be fun. Hopefully it's not at midnight or before, because then I'll be like, oh, I started, now it's dead. But we'll see. Yeah, maybe I'll have to look online and see. I'm sure somebody's said like when it exactly is, or maybe not. I don't know. But yeah, Wii U still kicking. And they say that, you know, some of them, if you don't turn them on, they might not work. So that's why it's good to plug your Wii U in and make sure that it still works. And all you would have to, and also for some games, you could just plug it into the wall and not even into the TV and just play it off the controller. I know I did that before when we were at when we were at my mom's lake house. I did that where I plugged the Wii U into the wall and I played Sonic All-Star Racing off of the controller with no TV. We had no TV in the room, so I just played it off the controller. So it's just pretty cool. You just lay in bed. This was pre-Switch. Switch didn't exist at this time, you know, so I did that. But I hooked
up. You're like, it'll never get better than this.
It was pretty cool. I mean, I remember Jeremy saying that he saw somebody on the train with a Wii U plugged in, playing it off the controller. You know, like it was...
Plugged into the train, wow.
It was pretty cool. I mean, you could do it. You could do it if you didn't mind bringing it. It's not that much... You know, I mean, the Wii was like, what, the size of a couple DVDs? The Wii U is too. It's just a little bit longer. I'm looking at it right now. It's got like a couple inches on the end there. But it's not that, you know. Like, I had mine hooked up upstairs because we were playing Mario U in anticipation of Wonder. You know, that was the last time I turned the Wii on. And I brought it down here so I could hook it up and stream it and all that. And I just found my Splatoon disc. It was in the case. I was like, yeah, you know, so... Splatoon 1, brought it back. And I bought some new weapons, talked to Sheldon, he had a bunch of shit to tell me. But you can't speed him up in the first one, so there's all these things that you can't do. Like, you can't speed through the announcements, you can't speed through Sheldon telling you about all the weapons. But yeah, just remember, whenever you play Splatoon 3 again, that it all started on Wii U.
When you fire up Splatoon 3 on Monday, it'll just be everybody holding their hats, and you can't actually play the game.
Oh yeah, it also, like, you know how you go to Splatoon and you see all these, like, signs and everything, like I just booted up Splatoon 3 again to play a side order, and it was cool because there were all these like trans visibility signs like in the lobby there, because everybody's very like, you know, LGBTQIA like plus and all that there. It is really cool. It was awesome. Like, I was like, oh, this is amazing. I forgot how cool Splatoon is and how like progressive it is and how accepting it is and all that stuff. And you get to Splatoon 1 and there's nothing. There's no pictures anywhere. Because Miiverse was already ended, and all the pictures were from Miiverse, so you can't see them anymore. They don't. It's like a ghost town. Like, there's characters standing in Inkopolis, but they have no pictures above them. And I'm like, what's going on? I forgot the Miiverse thing. Because the same thing when I played Mario Maker, I was like, I'm going to leave a comment on Jeremy's level, and maybe he'll never see it, but it'll be cool to leave it there. And I'm like, oh, wait, you can't leave comments because Miiverse is dead. So you cannot comment on people's levels. So it's Nintendo already, or the Wii U is already kind of half what it was because of Miiverse being, you know, already killed, which I always thought that was a really cool thing. You know, I guess they were like, oh, we'll just use other social media stuff. But it was cool that they tried to make their own social media. Like, that was a very Nintendo thing. You know, it's like, let's make our own thing. Yeah. And Miiverse was fun for what it was. And now it's not there.
You should probably bring it back, seeing as like all the social media is showing how unstable it is.
Yeah, now that they're all...
Bring back, I mean, do yeah. Nintendo's own thing.
Yeah, bring back Miiverse. It's much better than Facebook. But I did that. I got my 3DS working. I got online and I just tried it. I tried out Federation Force just in hopes that maybe somebody was playing it out there. Nah, there's nobody. There were no lobbies anywhere.
No love for Federation Force.
Yeah.
Holding the fort down till Monday.
I always wanted to play through that game all the way, and it's really hard to do single player if you don't have anybody playing with you. And I will still defend that game forever. I think Federation Force was a good game, and if we would have had a Metroid before it, like a regular legit Metroid, it would have got a lot more love. That's why I think we should get a new, like, if Metroid Prime 4 ever happens, like, release that, have everybody love it, and then release like a free to play Nintendo Switch Online Metroid Prime Federation Force, you know, that's like, ditch the chibi graphics, like, make it more, look more like the regular Prime, and people will love it. Make it, like I said, make it free on NSO. It'll be a hit. Like, you can even put that fucking soccer game in there that was really annoying that people liked, Blast Ball or whatever it was called.
I thought you were talking about the one that we played this week.
No, I'm talking about the Metroid one. There was a Metroid, that was how Metroid Prime Federation Force was originally introduced. Was through the soccer game during a Nintendo event, like during one of their competition things or whatever. And everybody hated it because it was not a new Metroid Prime game. But it was a decent game for what it was. It's hard to play on the 3DS with the nub, you know, because any twin stick shooter is hard to play like that. But I don't know. I would love to see it get a re-release. I don't think it ever will because it got such a bad reputation or whatever. But whatever. Anyway, I tried to play people on that. And another one that people didn't like, but I loved, Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes. I tried to play that too. Couldn't find anybody on there either. Like, that game was really good, I thought. But, you know, it never really had an online community. It had one briefly when it came out, and it seemed to just kind of die after that. And it was really cool because, yeah, it was basically a three-player Zelda game. You know, and I really wish they would redo that in some way. Like, re-release that as a fucking, I don't care, like remake it and release it for $60 or whatever. Just make it to where I can actually play people online. Because I thought it had some really, really cool ideas in it. And it also had stuff that you saw in Breath of the Wild later. It totally had Monster Hunter things in there where you kill monsters and you use parts of them to create armor, just like you do in Monster Hunter, which you also do in Breath of the Wild. It all started in Triforce Heroes in the Zelda world. So bring that game back.
They should make a Zelda etc. collection. They throw in all the random Zelda games that maybe you didn't get a chance to play. Do Triforce Heroes, do Tingle's Rosy Rupee Land.
Four Swords.
Throw in Link's Crossbow Training.
Four Swords, you know, Adventure.
All the random stuff that would never get a re-release on its own, but just put it all in one package.
I would like to see just like a Zelda multiplayer pack that just has Triforce Heroes and Four Swords Adventure in there.
Yep, Four Swords, yep.
And you could, well, you'd have to, because the Four Swords one, the GameCube one, was basically the Wii U before the Wii U, because you had to play it with the Game Boy Advance hooked up to the TV, and you had two screens, so it's kind of hard to emulate that on the Switch. But you could at least do like the Game Boy one, even though I think it is on there, right? Isn't it on? Is the Legend of, or maybe they didn't put it on there. I don't think A Link to the Past, the Game Boy Advance game, is in the Game Boy Advance app, right? It's probably not there.
I don't remember.
I don't think it is, because if it was, then it would have Four Swords on there, and then you would have some Four Swords for free and you could play it online. But I don't think that ever happened. They did release it for free for 3DS or DSi or something like that, like just the four swords thing did, so you were able to get it for free at one point, but it's all going away, so c'est la vie. But I did play Mario Maker on 3DS just to try it, just because I had just played Mario Maker on Wii U, and Jeremy and I, we had a conversation about like whenever he was still here, a couple weeks ago, we talked about like how, you know, what you could do on the 3DS one and what you couldn't. And, basically what you can get online, but you can only play like the 100 Mario challenge. So you can only play like levels that are thrown randomly at you. You can't search for levels. So I couldn't find Pink Yoshi and the Clown Wizards on 3DS, because you can't look specifically for creators or levels, which is really weird considering that this and Mario Maker 1 were out at the same time. Why can't you just share your profile through the both of them and just have all your levels that are saved on one on your 3DS also? That was a weird version. But, and also you can like go to like Course World and play stuff, but you can only play random levels. You can only play whatever they throw at you. You can't look for a specific thing. So there you go. But it did feel pretty weird to play Mario Maker on the 3DS, because I haven't played it in a while. And I guess the main reason I bought it was because they added all these Nintendo-made specific levels. So there is like a full campaign in there, which you got later in Mario Maker 2 also. And so that was one of the big things about it. But yeah, I played that online too, Mario Maker 3DS.
Forget, were the levels transferable, or were they just 3DS exclusive levels?
The ones that they made, like the campaign for the 3DS one?
Well, Like if you made a level in the Wii U one, could you play it on the 3DS one and vice versa?
Yes, because you can't upload levels to the internet on the 3DS one. That's what's really weird. The 3DS one, you can make levels, but you can only share them through StreetPass. So you have to like StreetPass your level to somebody. So any of the levels that you're playing are the Wii U levels that are on there.
Got it. I see.
So that was a really weird thing too, that you couldn't upload. You could make a level, but you couldn't upload it. You could only share it with people through StreetPass. So it's like you would basically have to like Like my joke before, you have to like hang out at a playground and hope people that have 3DSs and have Mario Maker, and you'd be like, "Hey kids, you want to play my level?" Be all creepy and all that. So yeah, that's
the only way. He's just playing Mario Maker.
Yeah, so that's the only way you can do it. Yeah, it's really weird. But you can play online, but you can only play Wii U online ones, and you can't make your own online ones. It was just a weird release, but. Like I said, I got it for that campaign. So there are levels that Nintendo made for Mario Maker 3DS that are only on Mario Maker 3DS, that are not on anything else. But even if you bought it and the internet was gone, you could still play them because they're on the cart. You know, you don't have to download. They're included in the thing, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's just a weird thing. And you know, the 3DS losing the internet, there's so much other shit involved with that. I want to play Mario Kart 7 online, like, you know, one more time before that goes. I'm just trying to be like, oh, what are all the online stuff that I have? You know, I guess I could do some Animal Crossing New Leaf stuff. Like, you know, some people, myself included, think that's better than Horizons. Well, I don't know. I think they're pretty close. But you could play some stuff, do some stuff with that still. Yeah, it's sad that all these... I mean, the Wii U only had, like, so many online stuff, but, you know, 3DS has so much more. And it's nice to boot up my 3DS. I haven't really played it since we moved here, and it's a pretty system. It looks nice. I need to figure out how to get those Virtual Boy games on there. I know you have to like mod it or whatever. I've never really modded anything before, but I would just for those 3D for those Virtual Boy games. But yeah, Wii U, 3DS. We salute you because your internet will be gone by the time we record again. So play it while you can. Send me your Mario Maker levels if you have any. Do that. But on the Switch side of things, I kept my promise and I beat Princess Peach Showtime since last time. I did make it through.
Very nice.
There wasn't much left, I guess. I mean, there were a few levels. I got to the credits on Princess Peach Showtime. I think I took it. It said on the Switch that I played it for like 10 hours about. So there you go. I didn't really try to hurry through it or anything like that. You get some extra stuff after the credits. There's some extra things for each level. I didn't play that much after the credits. Like there were like these extra little guys. You can like find them in the level, so they give you extra stuff to collect. That sort of thing. There's these sparkle gems that you collect in each level, and there's like 10 in the first time you play any costume, and then there's like. I think there's like 8 and then 5 and like the second and third version of those costumes. And these are like, you know, they're basically what you would go back and look for, you know, afterwards, you know, and these are kind of hard to find. And I wanted to go back and when you get all of them, you get like a picture of, you know, you get like a snapshot from the level or whatever. And I don't know if you get more after for collecting all of them. I didn't really look into that, but I went back to try to collect some of them after I beat the game. And some of them are just like, really annoying to get, like, and I've seen other people mention this, and I totally agree. One of the most annoying things about Princess Peach is that you have to, if you want to try to collect all the sparkle gems, you have to play through the whole level from beginning to end. Like, you cannot pick specific parts, and if you miss a part, you have to start all the way over at the beginning again and go all the way through to the middle. So like, I'm playing the Cowboy Princess Peach level, and there's a part where you go through this, where you go this really fast like side scrolling level. And there's a part where you have to jump into the background to get the sparkle gem. And it's really quick and it's really easy to miss. And if you miss it, it automatically goes to the next part. So if you die, you'll start in the next part and you can't start in that middle part where you missed the thing in the background. So you have to go all the way back to the beginning again and then get to that middle part and hope that you get that split second sparkle gem, or you have to start all over again. Like, that's what's like incredibly annoying about it. Like, yeah, I don't know how much I'll actually try to collect those, but that was a big frustration from it, even playing it through the first time. And some of them, you don't even know why you didn't get them. Like, they're like ones that you have to like perform a certain way. Like my two least favorite costumes in the game were the mermaid costume and the figure skating costume. I kind of hate both of those. I think mostly the figure skating costume, because like you skate around on the ice and you have to like press either A or B on these different icons. And I guess if you don't do it on the exact right second, you don't get the sparkle gem for whatever that performance is. And it doesn't tell you why you didn't get it. It just shows the sparkle gem with an X over it, and that's it. And it's like, well, what the fuck? What did I not do? Like, I hit all those icons. Like, I did everything that you said I was supposed to do, but did I not do it at the right second? It kind of does that for the for the cooking one too, but I still thought the cooking one was fun because it felt like a Mario Party game. But yeah, there's that too, where it's like, what the fuck? So that's annoying too, because you got to go through the whole game and then you get to the part and then it tells you won't get it. And then you got to start all over again. And then you got to go up to that part again and then do that part. And I don't know, maybe kids are okay with playing levels over and over and over again like that. But even if I was a kid and had this, I would still be frustrated by that sort of thing, you know. But if it was the only game you had, I guess you just play it over and over and over again. Anyway, I hope they make a sequel and they refine, like, the Sparkle Gem stuff. And they, you know, maybe keep some of the better costumes and add new costumes and all that sort of thing. And I'm sure they will. I think it performed okay. I think I saw it in, like, the top three when it came out. And I saw a lot of talk about it on the first week, even though I think everybody's moved on by now. I don't think anybody's talking about it anymore.
I think that there's a lot of stuff that you know, I keep hearing stuff that I'm surprised sold so well, like, because I didn't necessarily hear buzz about it. Like, I know It Takes Two sold 16 million. It was revealed this week. And I just thought, oh, that was kind of like maybe mid-tier game, but that's a lot of copies for a game that is not currently, you know, in the buzz or whatever. So I think Princess Peach probably do it pretty well.
Didn't that game get like Game of the Year 1 year though? It Takes Two did win an award. Maybe it was
won an award and everything. But yeah. I just didn't. They were like Princess Peach. I didn't necessarily feel. This is my feeling, my observation, whatever. That it was, you know, in the conversation. And I think that Nintendo, especially, like, you know, how many times does it surprise us that Mario Kart was in the top 10? You know, for like 42 years or whatever.
I mean, so, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, Mario Kart 8 is like the best Mario Kart of all time. And Mario Kart's always been a big seller. Fine. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a Nintendo game, so it'll automatically get like a certain amount, like, you know, just because. But I don't know. We'll see. Let's see. It says as of like 4 days ago, it got 77,000 physical copies in Japan. So there you go. Outsells PS5 exclusive Rise of the Ronin. That's just in Japan. I don't know. The only thing I have to look at is I just look on the eShop as to what it says is what's selling, and it was in the top five. And I was surprised on the stuff without physical, because they do all digital and physical and digital. It showed Battlefront Collection as number one on there, and I was like, whoa. And I played that too, because it finally got the patch. Finally got the patch where you can flip your aiming, finally. You can use the proper inverted controls. And I played that, and I played it online, and there's actually more rooms now. Originally, they released it with only one room per system, which everybody was really pissed about. So basically, there's like 60 people who have Switches that can play at once, and that's like it. So like the hundreds of thousands of people would not be able to play online. So, and then I looked at it, and there's actually a whole bunch of rooms now. So now they added a bunch of shit, and they fixed the controls. Now you can swap sticks. Now you can invert your aiming and all that stuff. I don't know why that wasn't there to begin with, but it's in there now. And I did get online, and I played a conquest mode, and it was still kind of glitchy, but it's still kind of fun as hell. Cause it was just really frantic, and I was just shooting the crap out of people, and we ended up winning, and it was fun. It was super fast, and it worked out well enough. And then I tried playing a second game, and then the game crashed and threw me out into the menu. So I was like, all right, there we go. So it's still a little janky, but still fun. But if I was to rate, as far as like the easy games, if I was to rate Princess Peach against the other two that get hate that they don't deserve, Kirby and the Forgotten Land and Yoshi's Crafted World, I put Kirby at number one. I put Crafted World at two, and I put Showtime at three. At the bottom. I don't think it's as good as either of those games. Even if you include like Woolly World, I'd put Woolly World at like two, because that game was really good too on Wii U and 3DS. But, you know, give it time. Maybe eventually they'll make a better sequel to Showtime. But after playing through Showtime, Kirby and the Forgotten Land looks like a fucking masterpiece. Like, that game looks like fucking Tears of the Kingdom compared to Showtime. Like, if you put them next to each other, like, really. Kirby is a much, 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 much better game with a lot more to do. And the collections is not annoying. Collecting stuff is not annoying. You don't get like automatically kicked in the next part of the level where you can't go back. You know, you can free run from back and forth in the levels and all that. It's much, and there's a lot more to do in Kirby. And Kirby has a whole nother game after you beat it that's super hard. Then I ended up quitting because it was too hard. But yeah, that's that. I did get a new, I got a new game. A game that I had actually heard about on another podcast, 8-4 Play was talking about it, but Cavern of Dreams. I had never heard of it. Well, and maybe I had seen that it released. But it's basically a 64-like game. It's an indie game made to look like a 64 3D platformer. And it stars a little dragon guy. And basically, you go around collecting dragon eggs, which are your siblings. Those are your siblings that you're trying to collect. And the more you collect, the more abilities that you get. So it'll be like, oh, you collect 5, and then you get an extra thing, and then you get an extra thing. And these abilities help you to find more levels in the game, is the way it works. And this game is really good. I've played a lot of 64 wannabe games, and I think most of them are whatever. They're not great. But this was actually fun. You have unlimited lives. It's impossible to get a game over, which I like. So it kind of encourages you to explore everywhere, and you don't really have to worry about getting kicked out of the level or thrown back to the beginning. You'll basically die, and then it'll just start you back at the beginning of whatever room you're in, and then you can keep going. And you don't really lose anything. And it's all about, there's not too much stuff to collect. You don't run into, Donkey Kong 64, where there's a whole bunch of extra doodads you got to do. All you're really collecting are the eggs, for the most part. I mean, there is, you can get, these little cards that are, explanations for items in the game, but you don't have to collect those. There's stuff like that in there. But it's, it's been a lot of fun. And I've actually, it's been a lot more addicting than I thought it would be. I played it a lot since I downloaded it after we recorded last week, and I'd been playing it constantly. I was actually wanting to beat it before this week, but I kind of got stuck on a part that I can't get past. So I don't know. We'll see. Cause I wanted to beat this. I was like, if I beat Princess Peach and Cavern of Dreams, then I'll let myself get Pepper Grinder. Cause that one looks really cool, but I want to beat some games before I get another game. So that's what I've been doing. But I actually reached out to the developer because it's a smaller one. And I didn't get a response, but I was going to try again because I'd love to talk to these people because I felt like they really nailed it on the 64 aspect of it. It feels maybe what you think Banjo-Kazooie was when it came out. That sort of thing. It's not annoying. And you can put a filter over it and make it all foggy if you want. You can make it look like a 64 game. But I like just playing it. It looks really crisp. It runs really well. And it's only $12. It's not really expensive either. It's $12.99 or something.
I would just say it compares to a modern attempt at a 64 game ukulele.
Ukulele sucked, so it's much better than that. I did not like ukulele at all. I thought it was total. Yeah. I mean, I bought ukulele when it came out, but it was a big disappointment for me. There were a lot of just really stupid stuff that you had to do that didn't work. And yeah, the second one they did, the 2D one, was much better. The Impossible Lair or whatever it was. But that first ukulele was, no, it was a snooze. I didn't like that game at all. This is the only 64-like game that I think I've really, really liked. I think it's the best one that I've played, for sure. That's not a remake of the original one. But I like playing this more than I like playing Banjo-Kazooie. I tried playing Banjo-Kazooie when it got on Nintendo Switch Online, and I thought it was annoying as fuck. The way it was designed and, the way you have to collect all the music notes, and if you die, you lose all of them, and you got to collect all over again. I got really lost trying to find the levels. The way everything was put together, it definitely was not as good as I thought it was when I was a teenager. I was kind of like, oh, this game kind of sucks now. So, yeah, those are my thoughts on that. But yeah, Cavern of Dreams, check it out. It's awesome. It's a very, very good game. Super, super creative. Was it F-Zero Maximum Velocity came out last week, a couple days after we recorded.
I tried it too.
I jumped on and played it a little bit at first, and I was like, oh yeah, there's also new F-Zero 99 stuff. So I went and played that. But last night I went back to it. And I went and I beat all the races on the easy, whatever the first difficulty is. I went and I got through all of them, through all three of the cups. And it's pretty fun. It's actually better than I remembered it being. I thought it was kind of a disappointment when I first played it, but I actually had a lot more fun with it this time. Maybe because of 99, and maybe I'm a little bit better than I was. Because I thought it was really hard when I first got it, and that's why I was having a hard time getting into it. What was it? What were your impressions on it?
I thought it felt like any other F-Zero game that I tried. I thought it compared pretty well to the Super Nintendo one. I played it for maybe 15 minutes or so, but that was my impression. It felt like the Super Nintendo one.
One thing I notice on this one is they're all mode 7, where all the stuff moves around your racer. But this one kind of looks like there's some depth in it. Like it kind of looks like the race is raised above the city under it. You can kind of see a little space. So that's cool.
Where does it stand on your list of SEO games?
As far as like 2D ones or like with the 3D
all
ones
of them.
Or yeah. Well, I mean, obviously the best F-Zero is F-Zero GX. I'd put that at number one. I'd put 99 at two. I don't know. GX and 99 could go back and forth because 99 is still really, really good. I'd put the Super Nintendo one under that because just because I love that game. And that's, you know, that's what got me into racing games was F-Zero. And I'd probably put it in last place. I think I'd still put the 64 one above it. Well, just because the 64 one has more races, it has more characters to unlock, it has a lot more to do. This one kind of just basically has the same amount of levels that are on the Super Nintendo one. They're just newer ones, and there's different vehicles. And in comparison, I mean, it's not bad. It's just I would put it at the bottom of the list of all the F-Zero games.
Isn't there another one that's based on the show?
Oh yeah, GP Legend. I wasn't very good at that one, so. Maybe I'd put it above that one. Hopefully that one comes out on Nintendo Switch Online, and maybe I'll be better now. Because I had a hard time getting through it. But that one was a whole bunch of like mission-based stuff, like kind of like the single-player stuff from F-Zero GX, but more based on the anime. And then there's F-Zero Climax, which I've never played. That's the one that only released in Japan. And there's like the BS stuff, and there was some extra shit that I played that had like a... that had levels, extra levels for the Super Nintendo on it, which I thought was the BS version that I played through an emulator. But, you know, those are just whatever. There wasn't that much to it. Speaking of F-Zero 99, I did, after I played Maximum Velocity for a little bit, I was like, oh, fuck this. I need to go play F-Zero 99. They added a bunch of stuff to that. And they did. They've added a bunch of stuff to it. They've added mirror courses, which I said last week. And when I saw mirror courses, I was like, well, that's not that much. That's not going to be all that exciting. But they did actually redo the levels. The levels are different now. Well, they're similar, but they've added stuff to them. Like Mute City now it has the mirrored turns where they're on the other side, but also there's a big section where you jump and there's a big like a ramp jumpy thing in the middle. Like they added a bunch of shit like that. There's these yellow coin, that kind of look like little coin temples or whatever that you drive over that give you more of the coins to help you to get to the top level easier. So on the new mirror ones, I actually got to the top level like three times in one race. So, I mean, you can do a lot more. And they also added the little turn assist thing, which is available on Mario Kart 8. You can use it for F-Zero 99 as well. And I tried it, and I was like, I immediately turned it off. I didn't like it. But I feel the same way about the Mario Kart 8 one. Like, if it's accidentally turned on, I'll play much worse than I would with it off, you know, because it's like... what was it? Jess's friend would call it bumpers. It's like playing with bumpers, you know. And if you're not used to playing with it there, it can make it much worse for you, you know, because it kind of basically keeps it to where you don't fall off the course. And this one keeps you from hitting like the sides of the racetrack. And it's just, I don't like it to control on its own. So I had it there for a second and I was like, I don't like this. So I turned it off. But I actually did, I did really good. Like I got 11th place on the Queen Grand Prix, which I've never gotten all the way through. And I got 8th place in just a regular race, which according to the game, I've gotten 3rd before. I probably got it right when it came out, but I don't normally get like single digits, you know, while I'm going through it. So I was like, fuck. But yeah, I'm just so impressed by how F-Zero 99 can still be fresh and they're still adding stuff and it's still fun as fuck. Like, I played it a lot. Like I played it like 3 days in a row just because I was like, oh yeah, F-Zero. And it still looks so good. Like, I mean, especially if you compare it to the Game Boy Advance game and then you boot up F-Zero and it has like the sprites, but they look 3D. They look like their own like polygons with the sprites, you know, on them, that sort of thing. Oh, and I found the secret tracks too. I found two of the secret tracks, which they had talked about adding, but I never saw them. I never saw any footage of them and anything like that. So basically, when you start up the game, you know, it'll show you like you can do whatever the event, the timed event is, or you can do the regular F-Zero 99. If you see on the left that the F-Zero 99 is glitching, that means that you'll go to one of the secret tracks. So it kind of tells you that it's going to be there. So you pick that, and it'll show you the two options to pick, and one of them will be the secret track. And the secret track is just like a combination of, they basically took parts from different tracks and stuck them all together. So I played one that was like Death Wind and White Land, like stuck together. So it has the wind, but it also has the ice and the snow and all that. And you have like the background of Port Town. And so, and then the music even changes from one to another, which is pretty cool. And I also played one that was like a mixture of Firefield and like Mute City. So that was really cool too. But yeah, I found two of them and I actually played one of them twice. Like I found it again. So they're actually, it seems like they're throwing them out there more so you can find them easier, which is cool. I always like seeing new tracks on there. Like, and there's a new one, new Grand Prix, new F-Zero Super Nintendo track, you know, like I've been waiting how long for this? Like, I don't know, 30 some years since they released this game for them to add new tracks to it. And they finally did.
You've been waiting since before you even knew that adding new things was a thing.
I've been waiting before I knew what DLC was, what downloadable content was, but yeah, everybody, turn on your F-Zero 99 and play it. It's cool. There's extra shit on there. It's fun. Those mirror races are awesome. Now you can get to the top level much easier and all that. And let's see. I think I got one more thing. Yeah. Side Order. I finally played Splatoon Side Order.
Which, oh, you bought it.
I did. I actually bought it a couple weeks ago and finally got around to it. I bought it when I got paid for whatever shoot I was on. I was just, I just didn't get around to it yet because I was like trying to play like Princess Peach and all this other shit. But I finally started playing Side Order, and it's a lot. I like it. I'm not very good at it, but I understand the addictiveness of it. Like, you know, it's basically Splatoon roguelike, but it's one that I can kind of understand. Like most of those, I kind of don't really have a hard time sticking with. But basically, you're in this giant tower. I think there's like 30 levels or something like that, and every 10 levels you fight a boss. And there's different things that'll happen in the levels every time you play through it, like a roguelite, you know. And you get to choose between three different upgrades. You'll be like, do you want this or this or this? And it could be like extra damage, or you can, you know, or you'll have like more paint spread around more, or like you have a little like drone following you. You can basically give attacks to the drone, like that sort of thing. And what's cool is whenever you pick it, you automatically get it. You don't need to like pick it and then beat the level to get it. They automatically give it to you, and you have this pallet thing that looks like an iPad that you're carrying along, and you stick in these little chips that actually kind of look like, they kind of look like 3DS games, actually. They're little tiny chips that you pull and you stick it in there, and it upgrades whatever you have, and you basically play until you die, and then when you die, you got to start all over again. But depending on whatever you collect, your stuff gets turned into money in the game, which you can use to upgrade yourself so your next run you'll be stronger. That's basically how it works. You know, that is the whole, like, you know, cycle of roguelikes that make them so addictive to me. I like the ones where you can actually do stuff to like upgrade yourself in a way, so when you come back, it's not like you're playing the same game all over and over again. You get to add extra stuff. So you'll start out with like one life, but then you'll get enough to buy like another life, and then you have two lives. Or you can come back and you can buy like a third life, or you can buy a continue, or you can buy like better armor, or you can buy like, you know, stuff like that. And then it makes it easier as you go through. And there's a, what is it, on the fifth floor, there's a vending machine that you can go to where you can buy extra chips and items and stuff like that. And every time you beat a boss, you get a key, and there's like a little locker thing at the bottom, which reminds me of Yakuza, because in the Yakuza games, there's this locker that you have. I'm sure this is a thing in Tokyo, you know, where there's a whole bunch of lockers next to them, and you can find keys all around Tokyo, and you use them to unlock the lockers, and you find stuff in there. That's basically how this works. When you unlock a locker, you can get a different weapon, and you can change your weapon, and you can add different stuff to it and all that. So that's what it is, and it's pretty cool. Like, I've played it, what is it, on the 10th floor, you fight a boss, and I went to the 10th floor three times, and I lost to this boss three times in a row. I was like, what the fuck? And then I go back the fourth time, and it's a different boss. They switched it to a different one, and then I beat him. And I was like, well, that's cool. I thought it was going to be the same guy every time. But it was a whole different thing. It was completely different. And I was like, all right. And then I beat that, and then I made it to floor 15, and then I died. But they throw a bunch of different stuff at you. There's like danger levels that are harder. And I guess if you don't beat one of those, they'll keep adding them. So if you keep skipping them, it'll make it to where all of them are danger, and then you have to do one eventually. You know, you get better upgrades for harder levels and all that. It's like easy, normal, hard. But it's been pretty cool so far. Like I definitely recommend it. It's like $25 or something like that. But there's some extra stuff included with it. You get to change your Inkopolis to the original Inkopolis if you care about that. But it's worth it if you want more single player Splatoon 3 stuff in there.
I'll probably get it eventually.
It kind of reminds me of Splatoon 1, because I think Splatoon 1 was the only one in the single player where you could actually like upgrade yourself, where you could like, you know, make your damage higher and stuff like that, and and change your gun, you know, to where you would have a better gun, like towards the end and all that. I don't think you could do that in two or three, where you could actually like upgrade your stats and whatnot. So I kind of like that, because it kind of reminds me of the first one. But it's fun. I mean, I figured, you know, maybe I was surprised I didn't stick it on Nintendo Switch Online or something like that. But
I was just going to say, I thought they were going to continue with that, because what have we got from that so far? It's just the Mario Kart and just Animal Crossing, right? I guess that's over.
Well, Splatoon 2, the DLC for Splatoon 2 is on there. That's why I was surprised for that the Splatoon 3 DLC wasn't on there. Whatever it is, the Octo expansion for 2 is included in Nintendo Switch Online. So you do have that. So yeah, you have the Mario Kart, you got Splatoon 2, and you got Animal Crossing, but you don't have Splatoon 3. So it's kind of like, why didn't you include that? But it's worth it to get it and play it. And weirdly enough, like, these levels kind of remind me of the shrines from Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. And they even kind of have that music too. The like that same song. I mean, it's made by the same people. They're both Monolith, you know, the greats who brought us Xenoblade, as I have Xenoblade Chronicles X playing behind me right here. But so I mean, it could be the same. It could be, you know, inspired by that, because they already did that. But it does kind of, like, there's a level where you have to roll these balls like into certain. I was like, I feel like I did this already in Breath of the Wild. It's like that sort of thing, but like Splatoon 3. But there are new enemies. There's these like cool looking see through fish guys where you can see their bones and their eyeballs and all that. They're kind of creepy looking, and I like that. I like that a lot. Like, I like the new enemies that are in there that aren't in the single player, as far as I know. And the levels look really slick too. It's all like this monochromatic, like, looks like super like futuristic and all that. It'll be like all like, you know, kind of like a pastel, but sort of like a metal looking, like that sort of thing. It has a cool look to it. Like, I definitely dig it, and I'll be playing a lot of it. Like, it's been my go-to so far. Like, basically that and Cavern of Dreams were like my pick of the week, I guess. There you go. I guess I played a lot of stuff between last week and this week, because the work's been slow, but, you know.
Well, I didn't play a whole lot of stuff, including, I did not, as I said I would last week, finish Ori and the Will of the Wisps. I'll tell you about how I got almost there. I did get to the end boss. And upon getting to the end boss, you know, I was looking at the map, and every time you show the map, it'll show you what percentage you've completed of every area. So I've completed of most areas 100%, but then there's like four or five areas where I was like 92%, 97%. I was like, well, that's annoying. I can't go beat the game without just complete 100%ing it now if I'm so close. So I went around to try and look and see what I needed to still do. The game will tell you most things that you need to do, but some of those remaining things, like, I don't know what I have to do there. So I have to kind of comb through the whole area to find something that I don't know that I'm looking for. So I would like to do that. I might have to use the assistance of some guides or something just to like finish up the last little bits. There's even like, there's one orb that you can, I forget what they call it, the spirit or something that you can get that has different effects. And one of them is to show the locations of all the different secret items on the map. So I have that one activated. And even though I have that activated and I've collected all of the items, still some spots on the map I have 92%, 94%, whatever. So I don't know what it is I'm looking for in those areas. So it'll just take a day when I don't have that much to do and I feel like roaming around, and then I'll 100% the game, then I'll beat the final boss, and that'll be it. So I gave it this close.
It doesn't do the thing where you have to like cover all the spots of the area to like fill in the map or anything like that, does it? Is that what it's counting on the percentage?
But you already did that. That doesn't count toward, because I've the whole map is, you know, demystified, unclouded, whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's not counting towards the percentage.
Oh, okay. Of complete. Okay.
It must just be some odd character they have to go talk to and, you know, get some reward or whatever. I don't know. We'll see. I'll press on. I will 100% this game.
I did the same thing with Metroid Dread, where I went around and 100%ed everything.
Yeah, I'm so close. So, like, I don't want to beat the game if I've only got like a couple percents left to go. Let me finish it up and then that'll be that. They did make the news this week, Moon Studios, the creators of this game. They gave an interview on, which I didn't know this, but they were they're actually 100% remote. They don't have a central office. And that was sort of the center point of the interview, is how do they operate being 100% in with no location, 100% remote. I just thought that was so interesting. Well, they said that being remote in their case helps them to actually be the best studio they can be, because they can take talent from wherever in the world. They can find the best people in the world, and they don't have to relocate people. And, you know, they can save on costs of actually having an office, the physical expenses that come along with that. And here's a studio that's, you know, in a moment when everybody's laying people off and all that, here's a studio that's doing it right, making a AAA, you know, well-renowned, you know, high-selling game, and they're doing it all remotely. So, yeah, everybody who's looking for what to do with their studios, maybe take a peek over at Moon Studios to see what they're doing, because they're doing it right.
Well, I mean, I know Nintendo did that as well. Like, well, everybody did in the pandemic, but I know, like, Sakurai did a bunch of, they, like, sent him everything he needed to work on Smash Brothers at home. And a lot of Japanese companies do still do that, where you can work remotely. I know, like, Square made it to where it wasn't mandatory to go to the office anymore. You can work wherever you want. You can work at home, or you can work, you know, you can do either, as long as you do whatever you're doing. You know, you can be
yeah, just hit your marks.
Yeah. And that's how it should be. I always thought that anybody who's forced to go to the office is only forced to go there so the people can watch you. It's just as a way to control you, you know, and it's not, you don't need it. You don't need to go to the office. Like it, and you know, Jess works from home, and they always say that you do much more work at home than you do in the office, because the office is too distracting. If you're working at home, then you do more.
You're focused.
There's nobody there to distract you, you know, so you'll do a lot less if you actually go there.
I believe
so
that.
It's like, you know, what's the point? Just stay at home and do it. You can do, it's much more comfortable. You're much more focused. You can do a lot more.
Yeah. If your position is more of an intellectual focused position, you know, you can't obviously work from home if you're building cars or whatever.
Yeah, it depends on what you're doing. But if it's like if it's like an office type thing where you're on the computer or whatever, you should be able to.
Yeah.
Or if it's, you know, if it's a computer programming sort of thing,
yep,
you can do that whenever. Speaking of video game developers, I actually delivered food to WB Games again. Yes.
Did you? Okay.
So there you go. It's the second time I've delivered food to NetherRealm Studios. I didn't ask them about what they're doing in there, but
you didn't geek out about them.
I wasn't like, hey, how's that Mortal Kombat 1 story DLC going? No, I don't say anything, because I just give them the food. But yeah,
You didn't slip in a Nintendo main card there under the lid when they open up their sandwich, and maybe here's my contact info. Check us out.
Well, I mean, all the bags are like sealed. You can't really open.
Okay.
That's, you know, so they know you didn't tamper with the food.
I'd have put it right in the sandwich.
Yeah. I don't even think it was a sandwich. It was from a Korean place.
So I played a game that we were graciously given a free copy of, called Kudzu. This is from 8-Bit Legit.
Yeah, 8-Bit Legit. But what I thought was interesting about this one is the first time that instead of an NES game, this is a Game Boy game.
It's a Game Boy game.
It was released.
You can really play it on a Game Boy. They have changed their name to 4-Bit Legit now.
Yeah. It was released as a Game Boy cartridge, so you can play it on the Game Boy. And I looked up, I did talk to the developer. Hopefully they'll be on next week to talk about the show, and that'll be good, because then I'll have some time to play the game, because I do think I mean, I heard it's good, well, from you. But
yeah,
you played it. What do you think of it?
I've only played it for a bit so far. I'd say I probably put 45 minutes in it into it. It's charming. It's like what if, you know, Link's Awakening meets a little bit of Pokemon. I say Pokemon because it's about, Not that you're like fighting animals or whatever, you're not doing that, but you're in this world where everybody's talking about this organism, you know, except for not Pokemon. They're talking about kudzu, which is this plant that has all these different properties that you can use to get through the world and solve puzzles. Yeah, it's a fascinating game, and it's got charm, it's got a lot of humor to it, and this is definitely a top quality game that I'm going to go back to.
Yeah, I'm excited to try it out. I looked up the developer on Twitter just to see. I don't know if it's going to show it on here. I was trying to find, because he did work on one of the newer Little Nemo games.
Oh, really?
Did any of those come out to Switch yet? I thought it said one of them.
I know there's two of them.
Okay. Little Nemo and the Nightmare Fiends is the one that he worked on.
Oh, okay. Well, we got to ask him about that, too, if he can answer about that.
I mean, the reason that I thought it was on Switch, or maybe it's coming to Switch, is because, like, the tagged post on his Twitter says like hashtag Nintendo Switch under the Little Nemo and the Nightmare Fiends. So it must be I guess this was posted in January of this year, so maybe it didn't come out yet. Oh, it was nominated for Debug Magazine's Most Anticipated Award, so it's not out yet. But
okay,
but that's cool. So yeah, we'll definitely have to remember to ask about that as well.
Go. For sure. Yeah, Kudzu is available now for $4.99. I recommend everybody check it out. If you're looking for a Game Boy Adventure, it's quality. It's a good one.
Yeah, only $5 too. It's great. Great price for a Game Boy game. It's I've seen people compare it to like Link's Awakening in its art style, I guess. But yeah,
it does look like that. Yeah, it has that sort of charm to it as well. But it's its own thing. It's when you play it, it's not. I don't think it doesn't feel like some games have felt like a Link's Awakening game with a different skin on it. It's not that. It's just like it has a similar type of humor. And the art style is that chibi style, and it's an adventure game. That's, I think, where the similarities lie. Also, it's quality. It's a good game. But I did get another game this week. I got Pentiment.
I saw that.
And,
yeah, there's
and it was on sale for a good price. It was, you know, normally it's $19.99, and it was down to $13.49, I think. So that's a pretty good sale for as far as being only a few weeks out from the release.
There's a partner sale going on right now on the eShop. Mm-hmm. Based off of stuff that's been on the partner showcase, I guess, and it was a part of that.
Okay. Yeah, I really haven't played it. I played it for about 15 minutes to just, you know, kind of, I played it for about 15 minutes just to kind of see what it is, but I can't really say I got a sense of whether or not I like the game or if it's good or not. I know it's going to be good just because the reviews are through the roof and, you know, the style is really cool. And I just want to know, like, what kind of game is it really? Because I really haven't read about it beyond the reviews saying it's great. I think it's more of a adventure game, like point and click adventure kind of game, which is right up my alley. So I'm looking forward to it. I wanted to focus on getting to Ori first, and I wanted to grab the sale price while it was on. So I got it, and maybe the next week or so I'll give it a try.
Yeah, I heard it's pretty dense up front, but it'll get there. Like, I know it throws a lot of information at you, I guess. And some people would even call it like a, it's almost like an educational game because it teaches you a lot of things at the very beginning. But yeah, I've kind of heard it's like, you know, it's like, it kind of sounds like what you would like. It's like a 2D point and click murder mystery type thing, but it has a lot of information about, I guess, the characters and the setting and the history and all that is really important. That's what I'm saying. That's kind of almost as an educational game, or kind of looks like it in that way. It seems pretty dense from what I've seen of it, and maybe a little threatening, I guess, from being like, oh God, there's a lot of stuff thrown at you. But yeah, no, it definitely looks really, really cool. And yeah, I've heard it, you know, praised like through the roof. So a lot of people really, really like it.
And speaking of dense, Inazuma 11 soccer game, which I normally love. I don't know, just kind of like, I started this game and it's just like, it put this brick wall of information and stuff to do and menus, and it turns out it's actually really like a turn-based strategy in the form of a soccer game, which I don't know, I closed it, I zipped it up, I threw it away forever. I'll never play it again. It's not a game for me.
I didn't know anything about this game aside that it was free and that it was a soccer game and that it was an anime. Inazuma, yep. What is it? Inazuma 11 Victory Road is what it's called. I've actually seen a lot of shit about it online, like positive stuff, like from the from the RPG sites that I follow or whatever. But
enjoy it.
It's like a worldwide beta test demo that's out there right now that you can play for free. Yep. And I always really liked the idea of sports as RPGs. I've never really played any like that, and I haven't played this one either, just because I wasn't ready to try to figure out whatever. You made it sound like it was like a real-time strategy game, and I just haven't tried it yet, but I do want to try it at some point. I like the idea of that, of like breaking down a sports game into like an RPG type thing. If somebody made like a turn-based football RPG, I would play the crap out of it. So I would at least give it a try. And I've played some like football RPG-ish stuff, but it'd be cool to see a turn-based one where you can kind of like break it down by play or whatever. Like I would enjoy that. And I remember seeing stuff in the past where people like kind of try to do soccer games as like ARPGs or whatever, but I haven't ever played any of them. There was one on GameCube or 64 or something that was kind of like that, but I forget what it was called. But yeah, I was interested in it, and I was, yeah, all I really knew was that it was free, and I was like, well, you know, check it out. It's But I guess you were probably looking for more of the instant action type stuff, the more arcade.
Instant action, yeah, the stuff that I just... This game threw out everything that I love about soccer video games. It's just, if you run, you know, I don't say you run automatically or whatever, but you run very slowly in order that you can, like, take some extra time to think out your decisions. And then when, say, an opposing player comes up to attack you, you get presented with options, like, you know, you can... pass and whatever, you pass to this guy, that guy, that guy, and then it goes into like a mini game depending on if you're trying to pass or shoot, and you have to get the timing just right. I don't know, it's just, it was confusing to me and I was repulsed. But if you like that kind of thing, give it a try. It might be fun for you.
I would say there's a demo for the Captain Tsubasa soccer game. That's another anime soccer game. You could try that one out. I know that one's on sale for $9.99 actually.
I've got that demo. I've never tried it.
Yeah, try that one and see if it's any better. I don't know. I was always curious in these. I also like the sports anime that I've seen of them. I've never really dug that much into them, but I always thought it was funny that they exist. You know, like one of my old roommates, Conan, used to watch like this basketball anime, and it would be like multiple episodes from one game. You know, where it's just like pass to pass, and I just thought it was interesting that it existed. I guess you can make an anime about everything. That's kind of what's cool about it. You know,
it's like how they do when they do Dragon Ball. It'll be like multiple episodes for one fight.
Yeah.
But it's a high school basketball game.
Yeah, pretty much.
I know the one you're talking about. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, it's I've seen parts of it, and I just thought it was funny. And there's like a tennis one I think that he watched too. That was multiple episodes per. For like game or whatever, but I mean, I don't know. They've done like we watched Food Wars, and they did multiple episodes per like food competition or whatever. So it's like, you know, it's not really that weird of a thing. But yeah,
yep, that's it for me.
All right,
so should we take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break, and we'll come back and talk about whatever news is here.
Hey, you.
It's me, Mario.
Yeah, you. Subscribe to our Patreon to hear our bonus shows, which happen every month.
I'm tired.
Tired of all the big corporate podcasts spoon-feeding you the same old video game news on every single show.
Ah, spaghetti. Ah, ravioli.
Then expand!
With Nintendo Main Expansion Pack.
It's us talking about old games that were important to us. It's us interviewing people that we meet at conventions. And heck, it's live shows from those same conventions. It's basically everything you could want that Nintendo Main ever made.
Here we go!
And it's just $1 a month.
That's less than a bad indie on the eShop.
It's $12 a year, which is less than Nintendo Switch Online.
Thank you so much for subscribing to our Patreon and supporting Nintendo Main.
Just go to patreon.com/NintendoMainPodcast and... Hey, Mario, let go!
Whoa, 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 whoa,
whoa. He's throwing us back to the show!
So long, gay Bowser!
Ah! Patreon.com/NintendoMainPodcast!
Game over!
We'll be right back. talk about the news, whatever's going on. There was one thing I wanted to say earlier that I forgot about my Mario Maker adventure. So
sure.
I went back and looked at all of my levels that I uploaded. There's a lot more actually than I thought, a bunch I didn't even remember making. But, you know, everything has like a world record, you know, for however people got it to it or whatever. I was like, oh, that's cool. There's one level that looks like nobody beat it, even though those 1% guys claimed that they did. So
what?
I'm curious about it. My level called Pilot Wings is what it's called, because it's basically you flying with the Mario cape from Super Mario World, and you have to fly through. It's a stupidly hard level, but I made it. It has a whole bunch of spikes around it, and you have to go through and get all these coins and stuff. And it says that it has like a 0.05% beat rate, and there's no world record. Like, what does that mean? Like, how? I figured if you beat it, there would be a world record, right?
There'd be some world record.
Yeah, there's no world record. And it says 0.05% of completion rate. And I'm like, did these guys, these guys said they played every level, and this is my level, and it's on the internet, and everyone could play it. So that's what I want to know. What's going on?
Did no one get the record? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, there should be a record.
You should send it to them quick, because this is a top-level emergency. We've only got a couple days left. Send it to them. They had a website going, which was, is Mario Maker beaten yet.com, I think. Mario Maker. Let me look it up.
I'll have to look it up. Yeah, because I was curious. I was like, why is there no world record for this? And 0.05%, I figured that somebody had beat it. That's so low. I mean, that must mean that somebody would beat it, but why is there no world record of anything, of anyone beating it? Like, I just don't understand, because if you beat it, then you beat it. You know, you should have a world record.
Yeah, okay, it's... Send it to ismmbeatenyet.com. Make sure they get to it.
Okay, I found it. It says yes is what it says when you go there. I don't know if you can actually send it to anybody, but I don't know if there's any way to contact them. They say that it was sent. Maybe I can try to tag them on Twitter or something like that and ask why there's not a why there is no world record for my Pilot Wings level. And I thought, I don't know. I remember Jeremy sending me a message on Miiverse and saying that he beat it. So I thought that like it would show somebody on there for it, but it has no world record. So I don't understand how that works.
Maybe they shut down the world record data already.
No, because all my other levels have world records. That's the only one that doesn't. Everything else that I put up has a world record on it, but that one does not. So it's like...
It was beaten by an alien. So yeah, not this world. No record for this
different,
world.
Different world. The only thing I thought is maybe... I was like, maybe they beat it and they deleted their account, but wouldn't it still stay there? I don't know. I don't understand how it works. Maybe I can figure it out by next week. The clock is ticking. There's not much time left to figure it out.
News, 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 news. Don't snooze or you miss the news.
Anyway, yeah, new releases this week.
Sushi Soul Universe. What is this game?
I don't know. I watched a video of it, and I guess it kind of looks like a 3D platformer. You're basically playing as a character that has to eat sushi to stay alive. Literally, it refills your life bar as you run through. And it looks like a very weird Japanese game. It's got a 30% discount already, which makes it $7 because it's normally $10. So it's cheap. I don't know. It might work.
It's enough that you can go buy some cheap grocery store sushi while you play this game.
Yeah. It's actually less than the price of, depending on where you buy it at. If you buy it here, that's definitely less than any sushi that you can get at Jewel. So that could be the, Our sushi edition. It could be our version of the Saveloy or whatever that they talk about on Switch Up. But it just looks like a weird 3D platformer where you have to get sushi to survive. So I'm taking it's like, you know, you have to run through levels and get sushi and not die. It looked like an interesting, silly game and cheap too. So I don't know. Maybe I'll check it out. Who knows? I think the big one of the week actually that I just added, because I watched a couple of reviews of it, is Freedom Planet 2 is out now. Anybody who isn't familiar, Freedom Planet's like a Sonic-like game. It basically looks like it was made for Mega Drive, or what you thought looked like a Mega Drive game. But yeah, it's like a fast 2D side-scroller. There's different characters you can play as. I actually played this game. I played Freedom Planet 1 on the Wii U. That's how old this game is. It came with a Humble Bundle that Jeremy and I got that came with a bunch of games, and Freedom Planet was on there. And yeah, it basically kind of felt like a Sonic game. There's different characters you could play as, but I was, I guess the second one has been in development for a long time. Like I said, Wii U release. So It's finally out on Switch. It's like 20 something, but it looks really good. Like the reviews are very high for it, and it looks really nice. Like the graphics are really nice, and the music's good too. So I might have to get this one too. I don't know. I think it's like 25 and it's on sale for 22 or something like that. But it looks really cool. It definitely looks like a Sonic game, but with better graphics than probably the Mega Drive could have done at the time. But yeah, give it a look. It looks real cool. It's been reviewed on a couple of the YouTube people that I follow. It's got like a 9 on Nintendo Life, I think.
And there's one called What They Don't See. And this is from Girls Make Games, which we've talked about this organization before, but I guess they're a publisher. But I thought they also did like workshops or something to help young girls learn how to make games. And I guess they're publishing games now. So that's cool. I just wanted to draw some attention to that because I think they were a good organization with a good purpose. It looks kind of like almost like a Dave the Diver kind of thing. I mean, you're diving around in an ocean and exploring an ocean. I think that's where the similarities end.
What if Dave the Diver was an NES game? It kind of looks like that 8-bit style graphics from what I've seen of it.
Yeah, so check that game out. And then one we talked about last week, Doug Huggum, turns out it was both an April Fool's joke and a real thing. They put out a statement on March 31st, which was the original release date, but then they said, "Oh, we need just one more day to make sure it's perfect." And, you know, parodying Duke Nukem Forever, I suppose. They had to delay it one day. And Doug Huggum, you can now play it on Mega64.com. Yes, it's a browser game. And I tried it out. And, you know, it's about what you can expect. It's mostly focused on the jokes and everything. I don't think there's a whole lot of depth to it. But, yeah, if you're a fan of Mega64, it's cool that they made a game. They put it out there.
Check it out. You just walk around and hand stuff to people, right? That's kind of how it works.
Yeah, it's got John St. John doing the voice. The guy who did Duke Nukem.
Oh, that's funny. At least I got him. Here.
He was in the original video.
Take this. Come get some. Gifts.
Postal Brain Damaged got DLC. Or got updated, rather. So I guess they did some patches. I haven't tried it yet, so maybe they fixed my thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, you haven't been able to try it out. I just knew there was an update for it. I already talked about the Star Wars Battlefront Collection one, because I just wanted to go through and set all my settings to the right spot, so I don't have to be tied to one specific controller to play it, you know, because I've been playing with the 2.0, so I could flip my aiming and all that. Speaking on the Doug Huggum thing, yep. I did want to talk for a second about April Fool's stuff. Did any of them get you this year? There wasn't really any that I was like, I mean, I, you know, April Fool's, I'm always like, if I see anything, I'm like, oh yeah, that's not true.
Yep, that's it. My guard is up.
But I saw a lot of funny stuff on the wrestling side of things. A whole lot of people posting that MJF is coming to WWE and WrestleMania this weekend. I don't think that's happening, but multiple wrestling sites all said that. Also saw, I guess maybe it was a real interview with CM Punk saying that he wasn't fired. He was actually quit AEW, which I don't think is true. I thought that was an April Fool's thing too, because he was fired, like 100%. I mean, they already said that a bunch of times. But CM Punk's an idiot, and he likes to go on whatever and, you know, cry about whatever he thinks is true and all that. So I saw stuff like that.
IJ put a pretty good one about Virtual Boy Pro.
That was funny.
Switch into a headset. Yeah, and then they pointed out later on, you know, Switch doesn't even have a camera, which I was like, oh, yeah, I didn't even remember that.
Oh, I noticed in the video that, there was no camera there. I mean, because I know that. Yeah, there was a downgrade from the Wii U and the 3DS. Both of those had cameras. So, and they got rid of them on the Switch, which is like, okay, maybe Switch 2 will have one. But yeah, it was kind of funny. Yeah, I saw that. Like, yeah, Switch.
I liked Mario Kart Open Road in particular, where you drive with your Switch on your face and Luigi gives you the best stare.
And you can't see anything, yeah. Or like, the one I thought was the funniest was the lady that was just vacuuming with it on her head, and that's just all it was.
Luigi's Mansion 4. Yeah,
but it doesn't show any pictures of it. It just shows, it's just vacuuming. You know, there's no, like that was fun. There was another one, Nintendo Life did like one about a fake Direct that didn't happen, and, this one I just couldn't watch because it was so annoying, and I know they were doing it to be April Fools, but the video was fucked up on it. Like, they made the video all like corrupted to where it didn't even work. So like so the images would freeze randomly, and they would never like.
Here's some great new stuff you've been waiting for, but you can't see it.
Yeah, it was all frozen, and it would kind of like you know, when you have like a really bad version of a video of something and like it kind of like pauses and it becomes like gray and then another thing like moves through it. Like it did that the whole time. And I was like, wow, you guys really embrace the April Fools. But also I can't watch this. This is way too like this is too bad. You know, I thought it'd be funny, you know, just to see what they said. But I couldn't get through it just because the video was so awful. But I think that was part of it. That was funny. What was it? Game Explain did a Metroid Prime 4 update. Like that was fun, where it was instead of Metroid Prime 4, it was Metroid Prime 4 as in golf, where they're changing Metroid Prime 4 into a golf game. Like that was funny.
Oh, that's great.
It was like 4, you know, and it shows Samus putting in a 2D world, you know, and I was like, that's hilarious. Though there was another, well, I also, Ultra Pro Wrestling, which is supposed to come out this year at some point. I kickstarted it. It's a N64 inspired wrestling game. I support it to where I'm supposed to get a physical copy of it in a 64 box for Switch in the mail. I made sure and changed my address and all that. Anyway, they did an April Fool's joke saying that they were changing Ultra Pro Wrestling into Ultra Pro Golf with wrestlers. So there were two games on April Fool's that said they were golf games. So that's funny. Completely, you know, I'm sure they didn't see Game Explain or whatever. I think they kind of happened at the same time, but it was funny that they both said they were turning it into a golf game. So there you go. So Ultra Pro Wrestling did their own little, and they've been posting a lot of videos. I hope that game comes out this year because I'd love to play it. I mean, I think it's going to have online. It's going to have a ton of wrestlers in there, like original ones, like a whole bunch of classics, and I'm very excited. It's going to have Glacier in there from the original 64 game, so I'm excited to play Glacier again. You remember Glacier? He had the super kick. There was his finishing move. Glacier was always kind of OP, I think, in the World Tour in the original 64 game. I always kind of hated him.
Yeah, I don't remember him.
He was an unlockable character. Maybe you never got him. He was the first one you unlocked if you played through the single player.
Stern Pinball did a funny one, which I appreciated because it fused two of my interests, pinball and the Netflix show, I Think You Should Leave. Yeah, they're going to make a I Think You Should Leave pinball. So I thought that was pretty funny. Have you ever watched that show or no?
Jess and I watched about 5 minutes of it and automatically turned it off because Jess's friend sent it to them and said, I hate this show. Please watch it also and tell me why it's awful. So we watched like 10 minutes of it, and I was like, I can't do this. Like, this is not fun to watch. So, yeah, that's what we've
seen. Oh, I disagree.
We watched 10 minutes of one episode and thought it was garbage and never. And it was the same as what you thought about the soccer game. I was like, we're never watching this ever again.
It's okay to disagree.
I hate most comedies, so, I mean, that's probably why. Most comedy I find incredibly irritating, and that was incredibly irritating.
If you know the show, it features things like a steering wheel plunger that doesn't fly off while you're playing, and Brian's hat. You can put Brian's hat on top of the machine. People who are listening who watch that show think it's funny. What else? I don't know. Were there any other good ones that got you? Well, I mean, you know what? I think I really liked Sega's DLC, cartridge loadable content. That is to say, you're going to do the Sega Tower of Power forever, where you can just stack cartridges on top of each other.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, pretty much the ones that I saw I posted. You know, like, yeah, there was a, what was it, the Sega Saturn Mini? Like, it's too bad that's not real. That would be cool.
Yeah, I thought that was more of an April Fool's disappointment than a joke. That was just like, I just want that. Don't disappoint me.
Yeah, some of them are just mean. There was one year where IGN did the virtual Boy Game Boy Advance, where everything was red, and I thought it was real, just because Nintendo was having a weird year. I thought it was a real thing, because Nintendo had disappointed me many times that year. I was like, well, why not? They might throw out a fucking Virtual Boy Game Boy. Why not? So I believed that. But yeah, thankfully it's all over, and now you can believe the truth again, if that's what it is.
Now that it's all right, back to real news. So some games announced along the lines of what we were talking about earlier with 64. Type games. There's one coming out called Corn Kids 64, which has been reviewed favorably. It's $6.99, coming out on April 19th. Looks pretty cool. Looks like it's got a certain very 90s type vibe to it. And I don't know. I'm interested for $7.
I saw it, but I got spoiled by Cavern of Dreams. So, I mean, it's going to be hard to top that game.
Get you back into that. Yep.
And Cavern of Dreams is twice the price, but it definitely looks better than this game, from what I've seen of this one. So that's all I'll say. Cavern of Dreams. It's great.
There's a Tie the Tasmanian Tiger bundle coming out, which at the start of the trailer, there's a little logo. It says Tie the Tasmanian Tiger 20 years. And I'm like, we're celebrating like mid-tier GameCube games from 20 years ago now. Like, we're giving anniversaries to things that were just like I don't know, nothings, also rans way back. Okay, fine. I guess there's 5-year-olds back then from 2003 who think the game is great and are anticipating this. Good for them. I don't know.
I never played it. Wasn't one of them, or maybe that was the other one. I don't know. There was something like this, like another game that was not interesting that was on Wii U that I bought. Or maybe it's K, whatever it's called. I don't know.
The kangaroo. Interchangeable characters. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't remember what it was, but there was one of them that I bought that was looked kind of like this, and it was whatever it was. I barely played it. It wasn't all that fun.
Yeah. I don't know. Not everything that is old is a classic.
It's worth the celebration of its anniversary or whatever.
Right. But good for the people who like this game. Right. PO'd Definitive Edition. I know you're interested in this. It's from Night Tide Studios. It's a mid-90s first-person shooter.
Now, that one I thought was fake, but it turned out that it wasn't. So that's good. Because they did actually, that's real. And I was like, cool. Because at this point, I will buy anything that Night Dive puts out. Because they've had a great record of making very, very good games. So, I mean, I love them. They did, yeah. Too many to count. I mean, their Dark Forces remake was incredible. Turok 1, 2, and 3 were all awesome. And yeah, they've done so many good things. So yeah, whatever you put on Switch, I'll buy it. Especially if it's a first-person shooter.
This series, for the longest time, I thought this and Postal were the same thing. You know, when like you hear of two different things, but they're just kind of like, you know, I did not identify them as two separate things until, like, I don't know, a good 5-10 years into their existence. Like, wait, that's two different series. They're not the same thing.
They share a couple they have letters.
Similar kind of vibe.
They both got PO in their name. It's just PO and PO still.
They're you know, giving a middle finger to the man or whatever. I'll play this. Sure, I'll check it out. I remember it reviewing, you know, kind of like okay back in the day. I don't think it was like set the world on fire kind of thing, but I like the style and. Sure, I'll try it out.
It looks pretty weird. And yeah, you play as like an angry chef, so that's cool. Like an angry pizza chef guy. That's what I got from it. It's got some really weird guns in there. I mean, that's mostly what I think you need to make a good first-person shooter is, you know, obviously interesting level design, enemies, and weapons. So it already has me for weird weapons.
No date on that one, but there is a date on Dadish 3D. It's coming out on April 23rd. There's a couple of Dadish games on the Switch already. They're like 2D platforms or adventure games, from what I understand. I guess they're bite-sized type games, and people seem to like them.
I've seen them before.
They're kind of cute and charming.
I recognize the name. I didn't know. I didn't. Yes, I just noticed now that it's a dad radish. That's what it means.
Mm-hmm.
It's a radish. It's a dad. It's a dadish. Brilliant. But this
I think you might.
It's another 64-ish, right? It's the low poly 3D.
No, it's a radish
that I like. Yes, it's a radish 64-ish. Dad in 3D.
I think you might like this next one. I don't know if you saw the footage of it. This game's called Renane. That's R-E-N-A-I-N-E. And this was previewed by IGN at GDC. There's a video out there, and real quick of them talking to the developer. I think it's worth looking up. The developer says Renane is like if Super Mario World, Third Strike, and Thousand Year Door had a baby. That's an interesting combination. It's essentially a platformer. It's like, what if you give a fighting game, what if you gave a platformer fighting game controls, or you made a fighting game into a platformer, is kind of how he was pitching it. And it looks like a, you know, an NES game, but, you know, NES plus, if you will, NES as if a modern machine was doing it. Looks cool.
So
I'm interested.
So since you say like Third Strike, can you like do the block thing where you like press forward at the right time and you can completely block? Like, is that what they're trying to say?
I don't know.
Like, that it's like Third Strike.
I watched the video and I don't think it went into like super deep details, but he was just saying it's like, you know, what if a fighting game was a platformer or vice versa? I thought that's cool.
Yeah.
It's like living on the promise of the Sub-Zero game or whatever.
Yeah. I was watching the video of it just now and I didn't see, I was like, when you say Third Strike, I think of those like timed parries that you could do in that game, which set it apart from the other Street Fighter games. And I don't see it in there yet, but I'd be excited if it had that in there. That would be cool.
The next one, I remember hearing about this a while ago. It's the Rose and Camellia Collection. And I remember thinking, what is this game? But now I got some more information. So this developer says it's an anime Downton Abbey with slapping. So think of Punch-Out, but slapping. That's kind of funny. Think like prim and proper ladies and gents from back in the day. People slapping each other. I appreciate that. It was a Flash game from 10 years ago, and they say they added some bonus modes to it. For the right price, I could be in on this game. It looks silly enough.
Yeah, I missed all that, all this, whatever it is. What was this, GDC?
Is that GDC, yep.
Or no, it's PAX East. It's PAX East, actually. It's not GDC.
Oh, no. Oh, I missed it. Yeah, I guess it was PAX East.
PAX East, yeah.
Yeah, it just came out in the last 24 hours or so.
Because I don't think Seth was there, and PAX was more recent.
I think you might like this one. This was called Inconbini. That's Inconbini. It's a game about working at a Japanese convenience store. Cool. It looks like a good game, like a story-based kind of game.
Yeah, I could be into that.
I think that's an interesting concept.
I do like Japanese convenience stores. The 7-Elevens are pretty awesome over there. You get some really good smoked cheese.
I found two more games that were not confirmed for Switch, but I thought, yeah, come on, these look like Switch games. So one is called Screenbound. It's a platformer that you play in 2D and 3D simultaneously. Now, that's really cool, because you're moving around the world in 3D, but you've got a Game Boy in your hand, and you're playing a 2D game on the Game Boy. So you're playing 2D and 3D at the same time.
Whoa.
That's like
Dragon Quest XI, the 3DS version that we didn't get here, where you could play the game in 3D and 2D at the same time.
But literally simultaneously. You're not switching back and forth between the two, you're doing it at the exact same time.
Well, on the 3DS version that did not come out here, that only came out in Japan, you could do that because it had two screens. Oh. You could play it in 3D and 2D at the same time. I almost bought it when we were in Japan, but Nintendo 3DS is not backwards. It's not region free. If you want to play a Japanese 3DS game, you have to own a Japanese 3DS. So I'd have to buy a whole nother 3DS to play it. So I didn't get it because I had already bought. I bought a Dragon Quest Monsters that was in Japanese, and I found out that day that it didn't work because not region free. Stupid. The DS was region free, but the 3DS isn't. And then the Switch was region free. So make everything region free, so you can play whatever you want. But I always wanted to play that. But you can play the 2D stuff on Switch, but you have to switch between them on the Dragon Quest XI. But the 3D on the 3DS was much different than any of the other versions, and I really liked its low poly look. Blah blah blah. I really liked that version. I wanted to play it, but Japan only. But this looks cool with the background and it's really interesting. So you kind of move yourself with the Game Boy, I guess. It's kind of what it looks like.
Last one that I wanted to mention was Arma Reforger, which looks like a modern Army Men game. Now, we like all these games where you play as a small little person in a big world, and this is one of those games. And I remember those Army Men games coming out back in the day. Honestly, I don't think any of those Army Men games were ever great. Maybe there was one that was kind of good. Like, I don't know. I think they just failed to live up on. They failed to live up to the promise. They just were never like, they're never great games. They're kind of mid-tier to me. And so, yeah, I think any game that could live up to the promise, I'm interested in that. It's an Army Men type game in the modern era. Looks pretty good.
I mean, it's a first-person shooter, so I might get tricked. Yeah. I might get tricked into getting it. There is like an Army Men first-person shooter on Switch, but it's terrible. It's called something Hypercharged or whatever. I tried
Hypercharged. Yeah,
I tried playing it, and it was I did not like it at all. I didn't think it was good. So
I tried the demo. I wasn't that into it.
Yeah, I tried the demo too, and I was like, this game's bad. So I didn't. Yeah, it was. I think it was like tower defense stuff, and I really don't like that. Like that's the one genre that I really don't like, and I think it was like kind of that sort of thing. So I was like, no.
We got some release dates. One is for Slave Zero X. This is that game that is the unlikely sequel to the Dreamcast game from 1999.
It's a prequel, right? Isn't it?
Oh, maybe it is a prequel,
isn't
yeah.
It before it even?
Another one in the same series.
Weirder, yeah.
It's coming out on April 11th. I'm interested just because I can't believe someone made a sequel, prequel to this Dreamcast game, which I thought was just completely forgettable. And then another one is Icky Unite, which was another one of the Sunsoft games. From what I've heard, it's kind of like a Vampire Survivors style game. So maybe that'll be cool. It's a Sunsoft game. So that's got to mean something, right? April 18th for that one. Now, this one I know our audience is interested in because it's from the maker of Celeste, Earthblade. Unfortunately, there's going to be a delay. So it was supposed to come out this year, but now they're saying it's not coming out in 2024. So probably 2025 for its Blade.
Yeah, I didn't know it was a thing until I heard it was delayed. I was like, oh, okay. I'd never heard of that one. I mean,
you didn't even know you needed to be upset. Now you're upset.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't care. There's enough games. I mean, there's so many games out there. It's like, yeah, good. I'm glad you're delayed. I probably wouldn't get around to playing you anyway. Even though, Celeste. I want to play that Celeste 64 game that was only on the computer. Put that on Switch. I want to play that.
Jeremy sent us this on the Slack. Nathan Tolbert.
Oh, yeah. We talked to him.
Yep.
We did an interview with him at Midwest Gaming Classic, which is actually this weekend, but I'm not going.
He was interviewed by an outlet called Smile Politely. So look up Smile Politely. Check out the interview with Nathan Tolbert. I'll read this whole quote from the article just to get you going. So Nathan Tolbert is a lead research software engineer at the National Center for Supercomputing Applications, that's NCSA, at the University of Illinois. And for the past 15 years, he's also been developing indie games in his spare time for his company, Bite the Chili Productions. These aren't just any games, but new games for the original Nintendo Entertainment System. Tolbert partners with various artists and music composers, and he has previously released games on systems like the Atari 2600, the NES, the Game Boy Advance, and the Dreamcast. And he's got a new game coming, which is called The Storied Sword, and it will be released soon. So I looked at a video of it. It looks cool. Inspired by Ninja Gaiden, and it has like more of a fantasy bent to it. So yeah, check it out. Look up this article on Smile Politely and read the rest of the interview, and check out The Storied Sword whenever it comes out.
Our interview with Nathan Tolbert, I think, is actually on our YouTube channel, because we ran into somebody with a camera when we were talking to him, and they actually filmed it, and then they sent me the video, and I synced it with our audio recording. So I made a video of us talking to him that you can find on youtube.com/Nintendo Main Podcast. So cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah, no, he was cool, and he was there like every year that I was there, and you know, in like the Nintendo area, you know, making, you know, like a 8-bit legit stuff, you know, making new games, you know, making new games for old systems, for the NES. And yeah, he had some cool stuff. And I think he's from Champaign too.
Yep. There's a documentary called Earthbound USA, which now Trey has seen.
Yeah.
And the news is that it's now available for purchase as of the 5th of April.
Well, it was available for purchase before. It was just more complicated. Now you can buy it through like Amazon and iTunes and stuff like that, and Vudu, where we had to get it through some weird website, and we got like a, I forget what it was through one of those video game websites that sells like merchandise and stuff like that. So it's kind of a weird way to do it, or you could order a physical copy of it. But we did watch it digitally like however long ago. But anyway, it's really good. If you like Earthbound, Per Schneider's in it. If you've played Mother 3, they kind of go through the story of the translation of Mother 3, the fan translation, and they have the people in there who did it. And it shows they go to Japan, they talk to like Itoi and all that. Like, it's cool. Like, it basically is about the Earthbound fans and, you know, how all the suffering we had to go through and, you know, through Earthbound 64 and Mother 3 not getting released here and all that stuff. If you ever had any love for Earthbound whatsoever, it's worth watching. I thought it was done really well.
Yeah, on a similar note, you should check out the latest episode of My Retro Life on YouTube, which is a YouTube channel that I follow, where this guy, he basically has, his family has recorded back in the 80s and 90s, basically his entire life around video games. Like, his dad was a filmmaker and loved video games and just was ahead of the curve on recording things, and would record every single video game, whatever. So he's got all this footage that he uses to make this YouTube show. And his episode this week, maybe coordination with this news, is about Earthbound and his experience with Earthbound, which I thought was really touching and really, really cool video. So check that out too. What else we got? Tetris 99 Maximus Cup, the Princess Peach Showtime.
Yeah. I beat Princess Peach. It's a fine game. But I'm always excited about new Tetris 99 Maximus Cups. We haven't had one in a while. So it's like blow off the dust of the Tetris 99. So I'll be playing that because I got to get those themes. Love them. Also, speaking of a game that was better than Princess Peach, Yoshi's Crafted World, 5-year anniversary. Can't believe it. It's been out for 5 years. It's a good game. Buy that game. Maybe over Princess Peach.
When I read that, I thought that was the Wii U game, but wait, no, that's the Switch game. It's been out for 5 years already.
Let's say don't look at the release date of the Switch game. It's going to be even longer, longer ago.
What do we got? New survey from Nintendo acknowledges the existence of the Mario and Luigi series.
Yeah, I want this survey. Send it to me, Nintendo, please. I know you're paying attention to this podcast. No, yeah, apparently people got sent out a survey about whether they'd be interested in seeing Mario and Luigi come back and all that. And we already got, you know, we got our Super Mario RPG remake. We got our Thousand Year Door remake coming out. Does that mean that we might get like a Bowser's Inside Story remake? Well, I guess we already had one on 3DS, but maybe get a proper one on Switch. It's interesting because, you know, that company, they went under because of their remake of, because they did the remake of Bowser's Inside Story for 3DS after the Switch had already been out for a while. And it, you know, just didn't really have a whole lot of sales, and they went bankrupt after that. And they don't exist anymore. But the original developers of Super Mario RPG worked on those. Mm. So one would say that Mario and Luigi was actually the official sequel. Because wasn't it called like Mario RPG 2? Or maybe that was Paper Mario that was called that. Regardless, I always was a huge fan of those. I think those were the best out of all of them. If you put them all together, the Mario and Luigi ones were the ones that were consistently good from game to game. Like Paper Mario had a few good ones, but then it kind of fell off when it started doing its weird shit and taking all the experience points out of the battling and all that. But Mario Luigi, solid all the way through. Except for maybe, like, Partners in Time was kind of so-so. But I think everything else was pretty solid that they did. So I'd love to see a collection of that, or I'd love to see... I mean, we already have Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga on Game Boy Advance, but if they could find a way to get, like, the 3DS ones on there, like or the DS or the 3DS ones, like Bowser's Inside Story or like a Dream Team or a Paper Jam or anything like that, that would be really cool, because I don't want those games to die out, because I think they're really, really good. So gives me hope that maybe we'll see a Mario and Luigi re-release, or maybe even a new one someday, but I wouldn't put your money on that.
All right, for this last stretch of news, we're going to get real serious, but then I promise we're going to end it with a stupid, goofy one. So hang in there. All right, real serious first. Game industry woes. All right, so Phil Spencer, this is interesting, and I applaud him for doing this, blames capitalism for the game industry woes. All right, so this comes from Polygon via a recap from PC Gamer. So in an interview with Polygon's Chris Plant about the driving forces behind layoffs at Microsoft and across the industry, Xbox boss Phil Spencer pointed the finger at, well, really just capitalism in general. Quoting Spencer, the problem is a lack of growth across the video game industry as a whole. He says, when you have an industry that is projected to be smaller next year in terms of players and dollars, and you get a lot of publicly traded companies that are in the industry that have to show their investors growth, because why else does somebody own a share of someone's stock if it's not going to grow? Then the side of the business that gets scrutinized is the cost side. He says, because if you're not going to grow the revenue side, then the cost side becomes challenged. So now the author of the PC Gaming article is Andy Trock. He goes on and he says, if you can't grow, I just included his direct quote from the author of the article because I liked it and I agree with it. If you can't grow by making more money, in other words, then you can quote unquote grow in terms of profits, share price, and all those other metrics that Wall Street types care about, by spending less. So the obvious question is, why are you bringing in all these new people if you can't afford to pay them? Of course, Microsoft can afford to pay people. It just doesn't want to. That's right, because growth. Yes, it's, I agree. I think these companies have to show growth, quote unquote, all the time. And so when they can't show growth through like actually creating interesting products that people want to buy and selling things, they show growth by laying people off. I would rather the first thing that they do show growth by cutting the executive salaries of the teams that are making the people making the bad decisions and not making products that people want to buy. I think that's how they should show growth first and foremost. Cut those people's salaries, not the salaries of the people who are at the bottom of the chain. Then you're going to like cut those, lay those people off. And then inevitably when you're going to want to make some more products down the line, then you're going to bring people back on. Like, why are you in the cycle of just like firing and rehiring people? Why not just take your hits at the top first and make better decisions? That's my opinion.
They could also help growth by raising minimum wage. That would help people to buy more video games. It all, I mean, if he wants to knock capitalism, it's I mean, all of it's broken, but also people should make more money so they can spend more money. That's a big part of it as well.
Yeah. Another article from Kotaku says some publishers are reportedly not sure why they continue why they should continue supporting Xbox. This is from they're quoting GamesIndustry.biz. The head of the outlet, Chris Dring, explained that while at the 2024 GDC conference, he heard that flatlining Xbox hardware sales in Europe have made some companies question what the point is of continuing to support Microsoft's brand and its various consoles due to a declining audience and a lack of, that G word again, growth.
Yeah, that's pretty rough on Xbox. I don't know. I mean, maybe it has something to do with, it could be, you know, I always thought that maybe Game Pass could be sort of an issue for companies too, because, you know, people would say that that's taking a lot of money away from them because it's like, you know, it's like Spotify. Like, you know, you pay a flat fee, but none of the people involved in it actually make any money off of it. So that could be disastrous for the companies involved in it as well. You know, I don't know.
Yep. And I think Xbox, they need to put out there clearly what their strategy is, because I think a lot of folks don't really understand what their strategy is. They've still got hardware, but they're trying to pivot to cloud-based stuff, and they're saying that, oh, it doesn't matter, we want our games to be on every platform. Your Switch, you have some games, PlayStation, you have some games. But then last week there's rumors that they're making their portable hardware. So like, what are you doing? I don't know. I think their plan just isn't clear. I think they need to get real clear about what their strategy is, be totally transparent and let folks know, especially the people who are making the games, let them know first and foremost what's going on, what they're doing. Give them some confidence.
For sure.
Embracer, remember that company that was skyrocketing and growing left and right?
Well, they weren't growing. They were just buying shit. I don't think they ever did anything that they bought. But I'm happy that, actually, this is a happy note, because I'm happy that they're falling apart, because fuck them. They suck.
Fuck them, yep.
Like, they bought a bunch of shit. I mean, they basically bought shit so they could fire people, is what it seemed like, or so they could dissolve companies, you know, multiple companies, and apparently they're kind of falling apart or selling whatever they have, or, you know.
Yeah.
Good.
So there was the $2 billion deal that fell through. And so now the news this week is they sold Gearbox to Take-Two for $460 million. Also, Gearbox confirmed that they did lay some people off.
Well, yeah, everybody, including Nintendo, is even laying people off.
Yep, Nintendo laid off an undisclosed number of contractors this week. I saw numbers ranging from 80 to 120 people. You could say that this might be, you know, in relation to the changing of the guard on the consoles and all that stuff. Okay, I don't know. I don't think it happens outside of what's all the layoffs that are happening throughout the industry, though. I think there's got to be some crossover there, some reason related to the industry as a whole. Yep. So give your friends in the game industry a hug and send the developers nice tweets, not mean tweets, because things are happening in the industry right now. And be good to them. Be good to the people who make your games.
Support their Patreons if they have one.
Yep.
Give them actual money.
That's not bad enough. Vladimir Putin, name who I didn't expect to say on this podcast, he wants Russia to make its own game consoles and a Steam-like platform.
And they will only have Tetris on them. That's it.
That's it. Just Tetris.
It's the Tetris game.
He said, stick with the hits. There it is.
And it'll be based off the movie, not the game. So it'll be, you'll have that. You'll have to play whatever Tetris was in that movie.
This is from WCCF Tech. They say, Vladimir Putin has signed off on a plan to create Russia's own consoles and Steam-like platform. This is one of nine instructions that are supposed to promote the socioeconomic development of the region in Kaliningrad, the Russian exclave located between Lithuania and Poland. The region is a special economic zone where manufacturers can enjoy tax breaks. Moreover, a silicon production facility was recently established there. Yeah, why would Putin want to do games consoles? It's anyone's guess. I think it's more about having he's going where the culture is, to try and influence the culture. And when you've got a lot of the media landscape is occupied by video games, I think he just wants a foothold in video games to get messages out there, to certainly survey what people are doing and collect data on people and all that stuff. And yeah, this is, it's unfortunate. I think you're probably going to see, and if you ever go on YouTube, you see videos from a company called RT. RT, have you ever seen that? It's a green logo, RT. I remember seeing their videos and that was interesting. And then I found out that it's Russian state media. And so I stopped watching all that stuff. And I think they're just trying to do a similar thing where they're going to create games to try and get out there in the world without advertising, hey, this is Russian state, produced games, whatever, trying to at best influence our minds with Russian ideas, and at worst, actually collect data on us and all that kind of stuff. Just be careful, because Russia's getting in the game industry. Just be careful.
I mean, everything collects data on you. Every app you use. That's just what it is.
Okay, so that's the end of the seriousness. Everybody can exhale, because here comes the goofy thing. I love this. The Tekken director asked on Twitter why Americans want Waffle House to be a stage in Tekken 8. So Katsuhiro Harada has been getting one request for a new Tekken stage, the American Southeast's 24-hour day, 7-day-a-week diner Waffle House. This is from PC Gamer again. And he asked on Twitter, he says, okay, I will only ask once about this request. Why do some communities send me requests for Waffle House? Please be sure to explain the basis for the request, including the original history, story, and background. I look forward to an explanation from someone who knows more. I just think that's so funny.
Did he get an answer? Like, I figured that it was in there just because you want to destroy a Waffle House. You just want to have a fighting game in there so you can destroy the walls. And I don't know. That's what I would do. I would never go there on purpose, but I'd like to fight inside of it and inside of a video game and destroy it. That'd be fun.
Because it's two things. If you don't know, one is that people, you could say midnight at Denny's for our region. If I say midnight at Denny's, you know what I'm talking about. It's like this wild shit goes down, people fight and all that stuff. So Waffle House for that reason. The other thing is that Waffle House notoriously stays open through everything. It's like stronghold. There's some government measurement they call the Waffle House Index, which is relating to how likely something is to stand in an emergency or something. Look it up. I just think this is funny that he's inquiring about this Waffle House thing. But I say, make it a reality. Somebody explain it to him, and then, sir, just do us this one favor. Give us, in this world of serious news and layoffs and threats, give us Waffle House in Tekken 8 so we can just beat the crap out of each other at a Waffle House.
Or put it in a game that we can play on Switch. Put it in Smash Brothers. Put that in there. Put Waffle House in Smash Brothers. So we can actually play it. I'd love to play Tekken 8, but you have to have a PS5 to play it. So I can't. So there you go. Even if it was in there, I'd be like, But no, there should be more corporate shitty restaurants for you to fight in inside of in fighting games, just so you can destroy them and be like, yeah, fuck Waffle House. I'm going to throw whatever. I'm going to throw like that king. I'm going to throw Armored King through the wall and break the window. It'll be fun. That's what I'll do. That's the one Tekken character I could think of. But yeah, that's it. That's it for episode 216. We finally got it recorded, aside from all of the...
416. You took us back 200 episodes.
Crap. Yeah. Didn't I say 416? Did I say 216?
You said 2.
Oh. Episode 416. That's what it is. Austin 416. That's been this episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Says this episode kicked your ass.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you want to hear more of us, go to patreon.com/NintendoMainPodcast. Not sure when this X-Pack episode will happen yet, just because Jeremy's took the trip, but we'll get it to you sometime in this month. It might not be till next week, but you'll hear it if you're on that. But for $1, you can hear all those episodes, almost over 60 of them on there. And for higher, you get videos and WART radio and even merch, depending on how much you're given and all that stuff. And yeah, check that out. Also, you can find us on youtube.com/NintendoMainPodcast. I found the link to Nathan Tolbert's interview, thankfully, because apparently there's a right-wing Nathan Tolbert also. Stay away from that. When I looked up Nathan Tolbert, I found a whole bunch of pro-Trump videos, so stay away from that. I'll put the link to the video where we interviewed Nathan Tolbert. We actually talked to him about Labo VR, even. It was that year, so there you go. So you can watch that. It's much better than whatever else is on there. So yeah, you can find that. And you can find Jeremy and I on Twitter at JMaxStack and Nintendo_Domain. We're also on Blue Sky, Nintendo Main. You can go there and look at... It's just basically posts of the episodes, but you can find them on there. There's a whatever Facebook group. We're all over the place. Just look up Nintendo Main and you can find it in that way and all that stuff. And yeah, we've been your hosts. I'm Trey Johnson.
I'm Jeremy Mikowski. I'm John Nitter.
Yeah, he'll be back next week, hopefully. But thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you next time.
See ya.
Laters.
Recording in progress.
No cloud recording. Okay. All right. Recording on the recorder. Wow. What a day. All right.